Yay. That's my Dave impression. Okay.
Got to be happy about something right at the top.
Yay.
Yay.
Boys and girls, your attention, please. Presenting a new exciting radio program, faster than an airplane, more powerful than a locomotive, impervious to bullets.
Hello and welcome to The Thought Bubble, a podcast about comics and comics-adjacent culture. I'm Joanna Robinson.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez.
If you're just joining us for the first time, we're here to answer your questions about all things comics. Dave here is our so-called expert, and I'm your friendly neighborhood novice. But this podcast is meant for comics lovers of all levels. If Dave wants to go in-depth or spoilery about a particular answer, he'll do so in our advanced section that comes at the end of each episode with ample warning. So don't worry. If you have a question for us, please shoot us an email at bubbleyourthoughts@gmail.com. You can find all of our old episodes at fightinginthewarroom.com/comics. So without further ado, let's get on with the show. It's Tuesday, September 6th. This is issue number 42, and we have a very special crossover event planned for you today. For those of you who are loyal Thought Bubble listeners and have missed us since we recorded, I believe, in May.
Sounds about right.
Then what Dave and I have been doing is recording this great podcast called Storm of Spoilers. If you haven't heard of it, you should check it out. If you're in the Storm of Spoilers feed and you're like, what is this Thought Bubble business? This is the comic book podcast that Dave and I sporadically host. But the secret sauce in this crossover event is, of course, Film School Reject's own Neil Miller. Hello, Neil.
Oh, hello. Lovely to be here with you guys.
All right. So this is the Storm of Spoilers crew on a Thought Bubble episode in both feeds. I mean, I think that's a comic book worthy event, don't you
think? It's a crisis of infinite podcasts.
It is. It echoes into forever.
Usually what we do on the Thought Bubble is answer emails and talk about news. But since it's been a while, we're going to play a little catch up before we get into some listener emails. The first thing I want to say, though, is if you're a loyal Thought Bubble listener and you've been missing us and you don't follow us on Twitter, so you have no idea that we host this other podcast, you should know that we talked about Suicide Squad, and Mel Gibson's favorite movie, Batman v Superman,
and Preacher
and The Killing Joke, all over on the Storm of Spoilers.
Nobody on this podcast wants to hear us talk about The Killing Joke any more than we already have.
Well, that's so funny because we're going to talk about it a little bit. But we talk about all those comic book, delightful comic book properties over on the Storm of Spoilers feed. You can find them. They're easily marked. And I think they were really good episodes despite our, predictable hatred for Suicide Squad. So. And then the next thing we want to do on this delightful show is talk about what we've been reading. We're not going to talk about everything we've been reading because it's been a while since May. It's been a minute. But we are going to give you a recommendation for all of you Storm of Spoilers listeners who maybe aren't comic book fans and are thinking about getting into comics. So we've got a newbie recommendation for you guys and an old B recommendation, a veteran recommendation. So
I like the term old B.
I stole that 100% from Doug Benson. So nice. Dave, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. My, I guess, old B recommendation, or something that we alluded to talking about in the past, but has now had enough time to sort of get into its stride, is Ta-Nehisi Coates' run on Black Panther, which has brought that character back to the forefront after his appearance in Civil War. And some people were like, yeah, finally Black Panther. And some people were like, well, what's Black Panther? And it's they've had a fantastic Black Panther arc to come back to since the movie has come out, or than old school fans. This is definitely a more, convincingly ethnic take on being a king and trying to rule a fair and just society from a position of a monarchy, which doesn't always work out. And then for my newbies that might be coming on, I'm going to assume you're at least Game of Thrones curious, and that's how you ended up finding this podcast through Storm of Spoilers. So I'm going to give you something totally weird, but that is capable of building a really good world for itself. And Thought Bubble listeners have heard this before, but Simon Spurrier and Jeff Stokely's Six Gun Gorilla. It's from Boom Comics. It's published all in one volume now, so you could get it. They did it as a 6-issue miniseries. You get it all in one thing. And I loved it so much that these guys are currently publishing an 8-issue. It's a completely different story, but it feels the same, called The Spire, that comes up in December. So I went back to read Six Gun Gorilla and remembered that I loved it because it's just this really weird sci-fi story that makes up all of its rules for itself, which sometimes in comic book science fiction one-offs is like, we're just going to do a zombie riff on this. And some people think that justifies the whole world. Six Gun Gorilla is weird, and it has a gorilla that shoots guns in like an Old West bombed out Westward world. But it eventually explains itself through excellent world building. So those are my two recommendations.
All right, Neil, what do you got for us?
I have two things. One for the old bees is I'm reading the new Batgirl series, part of the DC Rebirth Batgirl.
Oh, yeah.
One,
I read the first issue of that. Yeah.
Really interesting, written by Hope Larson, who did this really cool adaptation of A Wrinkle in Time, like, you know, the A Wrinkle in Time that Ava DuVernay is going to make for $100 million at Disney. She did this where she adapted and illustrated that into a more modern thing. So I've kind of been following her for a while, and her Batgirl run is a really nice palette cleanser from what we saw in the Killing Joke animated movie. Because if we're going to make up new Batgirl stories, they might as well be where Batgirl is awesome and not all the things she is in The Killing Joke. But it's about Barbara Gordon traveling through Asia and kind of seeking this knowledge. She ends up seeking this knowledge of this new fighting style, which I think is really interesting. It gets her away from Gotham. It's a like a worldly backpacking story. So it's only two of them out so far. So it's a good one if you have not picked it up, especially if you're reading some of the other DC stuff, which a lot of which is pretty good at the moment. And my recommendation for newbies is a bonus because it's a recommendation for both newbies to comics and if you are sort of new to the craft of filmmaking. Because I know on Storm of Spoilers, we've been talking a lot about movies and the craft of storytelling for the silver screen. It's a book. It's a graphic novel called Filmish by Edward Ross.
Ooh.
And he's a cartoonist, and it basically is a film history book. So it's all about the great films of yore and the different elements of filmmaking. So like even, you know, the various types of censorship over the years and what set design means. And it's all about filmmaking and how films have evolved over the years. But it's really cool because it's this graphic novel where he has his character that kind of takes us through and he redraws some of these classic movies to explain why they are, how they are, and why they're critically acclaimed. And so it's a really cool, like, double bill for people who are fans of the stuff we talk about.
Excellent. Well, okay, so my two recommendations, one for newbies would be Runaways, which I just read the whole original run of because Josh Schwartz of OC fame is making a TV series of it for Hulu. So Runaways, which Joss Whedon wrote a little run on, it's about teens. Someone joked that it's the plot of Disney's what is it, Descendants, I think it's called. But let me tell you, Runaways is first. But it's a group of teens who find out that their parents are supervillains and they run away and sort of figure out what to do and how to handle this world and what superpowers they have or abilities they have, and they cross paths. I'm so classic superhero comic novice that it's always fun to me to learn about some of these more classic characters through these off-kilter comics that I like to read, like, you know, Alias or something like that. So Runaways, you meet, you know, like Captain America shows up and it's just, it feels weird that Cap is there, Iron Man is there, like in this comic that is about these kids and is so entrenched in 90s culture and stuff like that, or early aughts culture. But anyway, that was a fun read. I'm also reading the Noel Stevenson version of Runaways, which is a post-battle world or current battle world sort of thing. That one's very topsy-turvy. I'm not sure that newbies should do that. But Runaways is a good starter comic, I think. And then for old bees, I guess I'm just saying, I'll say that I'm intrigued by The Vision, which, you know, is no revelation. This comic is getting a lot of rave reviews. But I would love to have a conversation with you guys down the road about, does this book deserve the hype? Basically, it's about The Vision, which is Paul Bettany's character, right, in the Avengers films. And he's created a android. No, cybernet. What do we call Vision, Dave?
I think android's pretty close. He's like, yeah, he's an android, basically. Let's go with the android.
An android family. So he and his android wife and his two teenage android children move to the suburbs and are trying to acclimate, and things go south. And it's like a very obvious metaphor for race relations. Like, you know, a black family moving into a white neighborhood, they scrawl slurs on their garage door and all that sort of stuff like that. But there's also something weird and really dark and maybe something about Asperger's going on too. So I haven't decided whether or not it's worth the hype, but it's very intriguing. So check that out.
Both. I'm like downloading the first one now.
Marvel comics. So those are our recommendations. Oh, I did want to say thank you to listener Aaron, who wrote in and recommended to me Black Sad. I got a hold of that thanks to your recommendation. So we welcome any and all recommendations for you guys. Thank you so much. All right, so Dave joked that we weren't going to talk about The Killing Joke.
Actually, you know, before we move on from comics, can I step in and say something?
Yeah.
DC Rebirth's been really good, and I'm like a Marvel person, and like I've been dipping in and out of Civil War 2, and like jury's still out on that one. But DC Rebirth's really good, at least like the first, month and a half that we've been doing it. And some of these things are showing wear because they have like a new issue coming out every other week or every week for some titles. So get on it and see if it's in, especially the whole Flash bringing back Wally West, White Wally West. It's been fun.
I'm glad it's White Wally West. That matters to me.
Well, someone else has pointed out that in terms of live action casting, they keep race swapping like DC redheads for black people.
Yeah, because it's the anti-ginger propaganda that they have going on.
Well, I mean, we got to get those gingers and push them down. They have too much control in society. Anyway, DC Rebirth's really good. I'm not usually a huge DC fan. They did that whole conversions thing that you heard me chit talk about being boring and about Earth 2, which I stand by, but Rebirth has been great and kind of for everybody, and it smashes together all the old continuity, which as a geek, I've been enjoying.
So on the DC train, we're going to stay on the DC train, and it's funny because we usually get hammered for not talking about DC. Well, we've got a lot of DC conversation this week. And we're going to talk about just something, a hint that Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy, aka the voices of the animated Joker and Batman, dropped at a con over the weekend. Someone asked them if they were done voicing Batman and the Joker, and they said no, and asked them, you know, what other Batman stories they would want to do. And Conroy asked Hamill, what do you think about doing Hush? And then Hamill asked Conroy, what do you think about doing A Death in the Family? Now, they might have just been messing with their audiences. These are very classic Batman storylines. They might have been messing with their audience, or they might have been teasing a plan of that DC wants to do for animated movies what it's done for live action, which is double down on their bad choices and keep on. Okay, to give DC Animation its credit, it's done a lot of really great, there have been a lot of really great DC animated films So the Killing Joke is not, you know, the end all be all of what they can produce. But it has definitely left a stank on the animated Batman franchise for many fans. Neil,
yes.
What do you think about there being more Batman animated films?
I have an immediate thought right after the Killing Joke, because after we recorded that our Storm of Spoilers episode on Suicide Squad and Killing Joke, I needed all kinds of palate cleansers. So I went to the comic book store and I bought like the definitive Harley Quinn, because I was like, there's got to be more to this. And I also then, like the next day, received an email about Return of the Caped Crusader, which is them DC Animated bringing back Adam West, which is coming out in October, which I'm like, okay, cool. Let's do these other stories. This is almost exactly what we were asking for when we were talking about the Killing Joke. So I think there's nothing wrong with them doing more. I do think that they need to kind of get out of the shadows with this stuff. Like, they need to get away from, and I know neither, Death in the Family is by what, Jim Starlin, and the other one's a Jeff Loeb book. Hush, mm-hmm. Right? So right. At least they're getting a little bit away from the Frank Miller, Alan Moore, the Nietzsche stuff of the DC, of the Batman.
The seedy underbelly of the Batman. Yeah.
So why not? And I think that the nice thing about Kevin Conroy, Mark Hamill, Tara Strong, all these really great voices, is that they can be adaptable to any Batman story. All that to say that I'm super excited about the new Adam West. It's got Julie Newmar's coming back for it.
Oh, yes.
Hold on. Let me look this up.
I mean, I loved the Adam West series. I mean, I think we talked about this when we talked about Suicide Squad, but I loved the Adam West.
All the old voices that, I mean, are still alive, I guess, are coming back. Burt Ward is going to be voicing Robin. So it's like, it's basically Batman, the 1960s edition, but they're doing it animated, and it looks like so much fun.
That sounds amazing.
I cannot wait, and it comes out October 11th.
Wow. All right.
So that should be a nice palate cleanser, and I'm fine with DC Animated doing more Batman movies as long as they stop doing stupid things with them.
Dave, what do you think?
I would be on Neil's side, except those are two really weird stories to pick. I mean, they both have notable things that happened, but so
Death
Hush,
of the Family is really violent, right? I mean, anyway.
Okay,
sorry.
We'll start with Death in the Family.
Sorry.
Death in the Family is where the Joker escapes from Arkham, gets a nuclear weapon, and goes to Tel Aviv, where he tries to sell it. So the dynamic duo, they chase him down. They eventually chase him to Ethiopia, and that's where the Joker beats Robin to death.
Yeah.
And bit by bit, he gets away with it because the Joker has diplomatic immunity. So weird.
That's just
kind of
funny.
Story to like. It's a story that they like decided to maybe try to kill the Robin by like a call-in, and the fans did, and so they just kind of had to commit to it. But like Robin dies beaten to death in Ethiopia, and the second like half of the story is just everybody being sad and Batman being like, I gotta beat him up, he has diplomatic immunity, and Superman being like, you're gonna cause an international incident, which just like nobody wants to see that. And then Hush, I think the Joker is in it for like an issue, because it's like a tour of all Batman's, you know, huge villains that sort of come back, and then this new one, Hush, is sort of behind it, and we have to figure out who he is. But it definitely takes place after Death in the Family. So it'd be weird to sort of have Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy back to do something like really weird, and then have basically just the Kevin Conroy goodbye animation show with one or two Mark Hamill scenes. But yeah, you know, they're weird stories to pick. And if they are planning to just adapt them like they did the Killing Joke into that other style, I'm not necessarily interested in that. Actually, no. I'm adapted in a straight adaptation of something where the Joker has a nuclear bomb in Lebanon or Tel Aviv. It's just, that would be just off the wall crazy. But I don't think they'd do that. I think they'd try to make it modern and they'd mess it up.
Question.
Yeah.
Do you think that it at this point they're gearing up for they're still in this, like, our live action cinematic universe is going to be huge, but do you think that they are just now going through and saying, all right, what are the most popular titles for animation? And can we pull those? I feel like it's a whole different team that's like doing this Adam West thing that like they just kind of slid through, like, hey, can we just do this thing since Batman's like back in right now? But like the main DC animated plan is like, we're just going to go back and find all the most popular Batman stories, regardless of, they're not trying to do anything specific. Like, they don't have an overall plan. It's just like, let's just pull these off the shelf and adapt them.
Well, I don't think that's that far off with how they usually treat Batman. It's just Chris Nolan was able to exercise a certain amount of control because he so successfully rebooted it. So for a while, there was like a Batman vacuum. It was like, Nolan says you could do it, or like you're dealing with somebody else and whatever. And so then when that ended and we thought we were going to, transition into a Zack Snyder Man of Steel-led something trilogy, what have you, there was like a weird Batman vacuum. So now we're coming out of the Batman vacuum, supposedly, because, Ben Affleck's fine when he's on screen in the Batman costume. But it's like not fast enough. So I think they're, finally trying to find some legacy Batman. And it's happening in the comics, too, where like the best stuff is the stuff that feels like legacy, but also feels new, like Scott Snyder's stuff. Basically only Scott Snyder stuff. The Detective Comics team that's kind of going on right now for Rebirth is cool too. But like, I don't know. It's with Batman v Superman and the whole Grimdark universe, like, which was initially, even the CW shows had to like stay out of it. It's like, if we use the characters, then, nobody else can, because it's all about the movies. I think they're starting to realize that that is not a great way to make money off your properties. And if you're all funneling towards one thing and that thing isn't a Christopher Nolan Batman movie, then you've just lost a whole bunch of income. So why not let Batman 66 do whatever it wants? Why not animate, The Killing Joke and Death in the Family while Mark Hamill still feels like doing the voice, because he's, going to be Luke Skywalker next year again too, so it's not like he needs it. I just think it's all lining up at the exact same time that we don't have a really strong Batman anywhere to turn to.
I really like that evaluation of Ben Affleck's Batman as being fine. Because I really feel like it's sort of like with Trump, whenever, I'm getting political. Whenever Trump does something that is not like blatantly like crazy, the media is like, why? He's positively presidential, because they've set the bar so low.
He didn't shit himself on stage. That's very presidential.
So when Ben Affleck shows up and he's like not a misery in the middle of like this misery that is Batman v Superman, everyone's like, I liked Ben Affleck's Batman. I'm like, yeah, it was fine. Like it didn't, like, I don't think of Ben Affleck as Batman yet, honestly.
I like Ben Affleck's Batman, but the laws of physics don't agree with Ben Affleck's Batman.
All right. So we are going to swing, a good transition, actually, between talking about Ben Affleck's Batman and what we might talk about next is the character of Deathstroke, which we believe will be showing up in the standalone Batman movie. And thanks to some footage that Ben Affleck posted on Twitter. And who's playing Deathstroke, Dave?
Oh, I don't know. I was still pausing. I'm like, do we really believe he's just showing up in the solo Batman
movie? Well, I thought he was showing up in Justice League, but then like the internet told me I was wrong. So am I right?
The internet yelled at me a lot too, but it's, Umberto at the Wrap, who I definitely trust. But he's the one that said that, and he said it really quick. And I'm usually for it, but I'm really hesitant because, like, sure, Deathstroke might be a villain in the Batman movie, but I think the reason we're seeing footage of him now is because he's definitely showing up elsewhere first.
I like that explanation. And then he's being played by...
Oh, the werewolf from True Blood.
Yes, the werewolf.
The stripper.
The werewolf from, stripper.
Magic Mark. XXL. Joe
Manganiello.
Yeah, Manganiello.
Yeah, Dave just didn't want to have to pronounce his last name.
Love that guy.
Yeah, and the reason, like, you know, I think Dave and I both wrote about this, but, you know, there's a number of reasons to think that Joey Mangs is in London right around the set and having tea with his wife, and he just started following Zack Snyder on Twitter. There's all these, like, suspicious little clues that he's Deathstroke. But my favorite clue for myself is that he looks a lot like Manute Bennett, who played Deathstroke so well on the Arrow CW show.
Well, he has the facial hair, which is kind of key to the Slade Wilson. He's got the Slade Wilson goat.
Yeah, but Slade Wilson usually, or the comic visions of Slade Wilson I've seen, he's got white hair, right?
Oh, yeah, I think it's more of like a hair-shaped thing. But, like, right. I was definitely looking at those Instagrams being like, who has tea with that ridiculous superhero facial hair?
But so his like swarthy goatee-ness is muscle-bound goatee-ness is very, it's very Manu Bennett, who I think all three of us agree did a great job with Slade Wilson on Arrow. And this allows us to talk about the CW shows.
I want to, does Neil.
Yeah.
From what you know about film production, what movie does this villain show up in? Because I don't know about you, but I don't know about a movie that shoots principal photography before it has a scheduled release date, which Batman's solo film most definitely does not.
Yeah, and I don't know what movie, unless they're doing costume tests, it seems way, way too early to be shooting anything for the solo Batman movie, especially because they don't have a final script.
I think the but actually point that some people were making was that they shot the didn't they shoot with the Captain the boomerang stuff in Suicide Squad? They shot it like Zack Snyder shot it, right?
Well, yeah, but that's like he shot the Ezra Miller reverse angle of that, but that's because that costume was being designed for Justice League, and they're like, oh hey, we could put it in Suicide Squad. I can't imagine there's no reason to have a costume existing for Deathstroke at this point for a movie that may not come out until 2019.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most likely thing is that he's in Justice League, even briefly, or in a deleted scene, or
pops up at the end of Wonder Woman to like look down at, you know, Bruce and whatever, like,
right, he could be in an end credit scene somewhere,
or like a Hawkeye in Thor, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Or like, you know, we see him get a mother box from somewhere and Batman's like, damn, and then that's it.
Or Jason Statham at the end of a Fast and Furious movie. Yeah,
yeah.
So I agree. I always listen to Dave because he's usually right. Now Neil is agreeing with him. So what could I possibly say? I was mostly playing internet devil's advocate. I agree with you guys. But now we're going to talk about the CW, because we've got a quick email from Andrew, who writes in to say, with news breaking that season 2 Supergirl will include Superman, this email's old. I was curious, how's that going to work with the overall CW DCU? From the Flash crossover episode last season, we know that Supergirl exists on a separate Earth. Now that's on the CW, do you think they'll keep it that way, or will there be a crisis-like event that will merge the Earths and make it easier to cross Supergirl and Earth 2 characters over with other shows? Thanks, and keep up the work. Good work. So we're going to let Dave speculate wildly on this for a second.
Oh, yeah. I think the mid-season of this upcoming season is going to be a crisis-like event. I just don't, I hope they're able to contain it just for that period of time. There's a possibility that we just start building towards a crisis-like event with some sort of like permeable universes. The only reason I could think about why they would hesitate is that, you know, there's a lot of stuff being piled on this universe at once, and comic book universes can take it, but Arrow has, you know, like your realistic, you know, sort of like ground-based villains. Flash has all like this Silver Age time travel stuff. Legends of Tomorrow took time travel and like tripled down on it. And Supergirl has always had the alien angle. So they had, you know, the Martian Manhunter characters. They got to have, you know, the crazier alien inventions. they took Red Tornado because somebody had to. But it, certain of these characters will work in different places, and certain of them won't. You could slap them all together and make a mash, which is basically Crisis on Infinite Earths, which I feel is what Flash was hinting towards in its pilot, and we were like, oh, we'll never actually get there. But now they're at a point where I think they'd be wasting intellectual property the longer they keep these things apart. Because although it may be weird to suddenly have a world that, you know, is used to Superman, have certain parts bleed over into a world where there's never been a Superman, I think that the dynamics that you could set up that these shows are set up to do, which is just basically the second level DC characters get painted with traits of the top level ones. You don't have to, you could stop making Barry Allen Superman because you actually have a Supergirl, and you could let Arrow be grimdark and, you know, bitch about losing his family like Batman, and you have those two together. And I think the sooner you get those two together, and the sooner you have the possibility of there being a television Justice League any given week, the more options you have for cross-pollinating characters and for people tuning in every day of a week live, which is going to be like the ultimate goal of planning a series in this sort of overlapping way. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do the musical before what I think is going to be the big crossover event, especially since Flash crossed over to Supergirl, but then didn't mention it when he came back to the Flash, and it was really weird.
So weird.
And Flash is going to start off in a different, you know, universe this season anyway, because he's going through Flashpoint, and that could maybe end up playing something with it. The Legend of Tomorrow team is dealing with the old Justice Society, so that's going to be like in the past. They're introducing basically all the crazy sci-fi dynamics. You could incept something like Infinite Crisis, and it'll be confusing enough that you're like, this is the status quo coming out. And if you confidently make those first few strides with the crossover faux Justice League, I think it'll really work. But there's also a way you could face plant it where, like, you do Infinite Crisis, but like Black Laurel, Black Canary is the, you know, the Barry again, or you like, you kill the wrong character that like doesn't come back. So I'm always excited to see CW shows, but that's because each season they're adding something that's like they're pulling more of their Jenga base out and stacking it more at the top. And at some point there's going to be a glorious crashing down, and it's just whether or not it's intentional at this point, but it's got to be this season, right?
Could be. Well, I have a very important question for Neil. I'm on record as hating the crossover events on the CW comic book shows. Do you have any feelings about their crossover?
So I don't care about Legends of Tomorrow at all.
Right. I will say really quickly, I liked Barry Allen on Supergirl. That's about it. Okay, go ahead.
Barry Allen on Supergirl is good. I think it works best when it's the Flash on Arrow or the Flash on something else.
Right.
Because I think the Flash is the best show among them all. And anytime you can take Grant Gustin's character, who is so easy to like and so personable, and put him elsewhere, it works. I have here's a different question.
Okay.
So if they do like a mini Justice League, we can't call them the Justice League because it's not like Batman and Superman. Can we call them something else, like the Millennial Justice Club, or can we come up with like a better name for like Justice Kids?
It's definitely something we're going to get to do as a fandom, because we're going to get there before the shows get there.
Right. So
this is where we start debating what we're going to call them.
But anyway, the simple answer to your question is I have no problem with the crossovers. Mostly, especially when it's the Flash going elsewhere.
Okay. The launch of Legends of Tomorrow was such a painful event for me. It's such a painful memory of like them shoehorning some hot girl bullshit into like these shows. So I don't mind dabbling in Legends of Tomorrow. I really hated how it was launched, and I hate the idea of having to track, which is exactly what they want, track all of these shows. And I'm like half convinced that when Riverdale premieres, they're somehow going to make that part of this, even though it's a different comic company. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, an iZombie and all their comic book stuff, and it's all going to be franchised.
I will say this, like, especially with the Legend of Tomorrow thing, I'm always happier when the brunt of that is on Arrow, because that means the Flash gets to do other stuff, like Earth 2 stuff. And like, I'm fine with Arrow, because Arrow's the show I could like miss for a couple weeks and come back to.
Right.
So I'm always glad when Arrow gets the brunt of all that junk. And it's actually, to me, sometimes a little bit better than like some of the flashbacky Arrow stuff, which I mean,
I'm glad they're going to abandon Flashback. And I really think the fact that they keep adding brighter shades to the DC universe on top of Arrow is like really prepping us for a season that's like, you know, old Green Lantern versus Green Arrow, like social justice shit. And I'm really hoping that whatever it is, like adding the Melissa Benoist sisterhood of Supergirl to this distinctly, you know, broing out, and then, oh yeah, the barista's a hot girl series is will be, you know, super fun and bringing out, like, I don't know, reviving Arrow in a certain way of focusing DC, because you have aliens and Supergirl, so maybe you know, the Flash doesn't need to be jumping through time every other week. You know, I like it. I hope they're able to just be calm, and instead of trying to do too much, they just make sure that they're making tiny confident steps. Because like I was saying, I don't want them to draw it out, but if they have to take a whole, you know, season to do Crisis right, then they should.
We are going to move to the comic book movies, because this is a segment I'm going to call Dave Told You So. Dave?
Hey! So I think it's shaping up pretty much where we're going to see the last of our Infinity Stones in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We've talked about things as if they were rumors, but they're sort of coming together the more we're seeing of Doctor Strange, which I believe is going to have our time gem, and Thor Ragnarok, which I believe will have our soul gem. The time gem has been a little easier to track, both because I got like a peek at like a breakdown of some scenes, and time was involved. And in sort of the trailer, if you put together all the shots you see of crazy magic happening in the second Doctor Strange trailer, there's actually one scene where there's just two guys fighting on the street, and the city's actually unfalling apart around them. So there's sort of a hint there that there's going to be some time involved. There's been publicity stills of Benedict Cumberbatch using the Eye of Agamotto, and it's projecting green, like, incantation signs. And we know from having seen all the Infinity Stones and Guardians of the Galaxy, thanks to Benicio del Toro, and a nice little, you know, exposition download, that we're missing, like, the green and, like, the goldish ones. So presumably the green one is inside the Eye of Agamotto, which makes sense because set photos from Thor Ragnarok show that they might go looking for Doctor Strange at some point in New York, which would be that Thor has, you know, left the Marvel Cinematic Universe to go back and figure out what his vision was about that was sort of cut from Avengers Age of Ultron, but told him that the Infinity Stones were a threat, and sort of that these stones were a key to whatever was coming. And his old friend Heimdall, played by Idris Elba, had like crazy white eyes and grabbed him and said, "We're in hell." And so it's interesting that Ragnarok at some point is going to bring Hela from the plane of hell to Asgard. And the rumor that I believe my friends at geek.com broke, Latino Review broke the rumor that Hela is actually going to kill Heimdall early on to sort of like establish dominance, but it's not gonna be that big of a deal because Thor Ragnarok is going to deal with like these sort of passing in between death and whatnot. Ragnarok in the Thor comics is where all the gods sort of like fight and die and are reborn. I don't think the movie is going to take that literally. But I do think it's going to have a lot to do with, you know, Valhalla and what hell is and what death is and whatnot. And so I think all of that's going to start, you know, being a good place where the Soul Stone can pop up. And as we mentioned, it's sort of goldish. And as I mentioned from Thor's vision, Heimdall's eyes are sort of missing. So if you were to look at alterations to Heimdall's costume in between the two Thor movies, they made his eyes more noticeably gold, and they added a little stone at the center of his breast piece. So I'm just saying maybe Heimdall has controlled the Soul Stone, and it's not Hela just establishing dominance, which she comes through, but she needs to actually remove a stone. And so there's a few hints that people have been picking up on the internets, such as Heimdall mentioning that he could see thousands of souls, not saying that he's watching hundreds of races or a bunch of people. That could be that we've now found these other stones, and now we just need the two movies to sort of introduce them to us for Thanos to come and, you know, unite them in the now one part in Avengers Infinity War that sort of pushes us into what's coming next. So all that stuff's sort of been clicking together. I think we've talked about all of it in various episodes, but it's totally, I'm feeling confident the more stuff that rolls out that we've got all the stones, and they all spell Thanos acrostically, which we'll deal with if it ever becomes like a true fact. But necklace and Heimdall would add the N and the H to Thanos of our stones.
Yeah, so that is a lot of information. I have a quick question for you about the Infinity Stones.
Yeah.
Is there any chance for the normal viewer they are anything other than a MacGuffin? I guess define normal viewer. Average viewer? Non deep dyed in the wool comic book nerd viewer?
I don't think that either of them are going to be presented necessarily as MacGuffins. So, like, the Eye of Agamotto's, I think it's going to have maybe some time properties, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be, like, the focal center of it. I mean, it has other properties in the comic book that are more magical in nature, and I don't think, like, the Infinity Stones necessarily have to be, like, super specific about how they work. So I think that's another case where it could be, like, inside of it is powering it as a stone. And then I think the Soul Stone specifically has to be soul, because you know, we have Valkyrie in here, we have the, you know, basically the ruler of the Ragnarok hell, so I think that's how they're going to work around soul. But I think definitely the remaining two stones are going to feel more like they're themed stones than the Aether,
yeah,
which just felt like a nothing. But I think, like, when they left these two in films where they could be very specific pieces, and because we know they're Infinity Stones, especially in Thor Ragnarok, that might, you know, elevate them beyond normal importance. Basically, if they could pull the same trick that they did with the Avengers, where, like, we got all these heroes and then we got them together and we're like, oh shit, all together is a completely different thing. If they could do that same sort of thing with the Infinity Stones, then the pattern would dictate the last few are going to be the most well-executed, just because they have the most knowledge to work off of. So the Soul Stone should be thrilling, and that movie should be fun, and Jeff Goldblum maybe has something to do with getting it back. So it's going to be, you know, I'm hoping they save the best for last.
Neil, I have two questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, what is it like to be in the presence of a full Dave Gonzalez geek download? It's an experience, right?
I think it's funny because it's a similar thought to when I think try to like wrap my mind around what's happening and what's going to happen in these next couple Marvel movies, and all I can think about is the Meeseeks from Rick and Morty when the Meeseeks is like, it's getting weird. So there's that. But I feel like, so the Infinity Stones are ultimately very important, right? Like, they go in the glove. He uses the power, Thanos uses the power glove to do terrible things or eat worlds or whatever he does when he gets out of his
power
chair.
Power glove is only what I'm calling it for now.
Yeah. So, like, one of the first things he has in the comic is he puts it on and instantly blinks out all life, like half of all life in the universe. So just reduces things by half. People just die, never existed, just like blinks it out because it makes you omnipotent, essentially. It makes you a god. So if you could think about what the ultimate MacGuffin would be, that's what it is, and that's what it's building to. They just could have done a better part of doing, like, each one of these specials he powers does something different, because right now, like, the power gem and the aether basically just, like, destroy things they touch, and that doesn't help you become a god. But, you know, hopefully something with, like, time and soul will be dealing with something a little bit more ineffable and therefore cooler.
What's interesting to me is, or what will be interesting is when we get to Infinity War, whether Infinity War will be about how to stop Thanos as he's using the glove, or how to stop Thanos from getting the glove together.
Right.
Because I feel like if he gets the, it's called the Infinity Gauntlet. I know what it is. I'm not
stupid. I know, but the power glove is hilarious.
So he, you know, because once he puts it on, he's all powerful, and it's like, I don't understand how they stop him at that point, especially in a movie that is sort of based in reality. But if it's all about them trying to stop him from getting this all together, that might actually be a decent way to deliver that story in a live-action film.
I think Dave has been predicting, though, that, well, this is back when Infinity War was two-parter, but I think Dave was predicting, like, a massive deaths of our main Avengers that we know and love in the first installation, and then them immediately coming back to life basically in the second installation. Now that they're not really calling them part one and part two, I don't know if that changes your predictions, Dave, but
well, I mean, it changes, you know, if people are going to come back and how they're going to come back, but I still think it's a great place to kill a whole bunch of people. I suppose, like, basically, what I've been saying since Avengers Age of Ultron is the oh shit moment in Avengers Infinity War is going to be, you know, we got to stop this guy, you know, he's really bad, but yeah, everybody we face is really bad and blah, blah, blah. And then he's just going to dig the stone out of Vision's head and we're going to be like, oh shit. And then things are going to, you know, kick up a notch. But I still think, you know, the Iron Man vision of the broken Captain America shield, you know, floating in space, that's pretty definitive Infinity War, imagery from
iconography,
the comics.
Yeah.
Iconography from the comics. So I still think we're looking at that. I just think that Tony, you know, interpreted that vision as being Ultron specific for that movie. But I think ultimately he's going to figure out that, you know, he has this weird floating space platform to go die on. And, you know, then Robert Downey Jr. gets to ask for another dump truck full of money.
So my second question for Neil was if he had any questions, and he asked a question. So
yeah, I'm good now.
We sold that. Dave, if people want to read more about your thoughts on Infinity Stones, where should they go?
You should go to geek.com. We'll be following the Marvels for sure.
Geek.com, follow the Marvels, follow the Dave. Save the cheerleader, save the world.
Okay. Follow the Stones, get the power glove.
Yep, get the power glove. It's bad, in a good way.
So last thing we talk about before we go is I just want all of us to name, like, which comic book property, be it a book, TV show, movie, fan fiction you're writing in your diary, whatever it is, that you're most excited about that's on the horizon. I'm going to go first because I can. And pick, of course, the new Warriors comedy series that is reportedly being shopped, developed by Marvel and ABC Studios, featuring none other than my fave, Squirrel Girl. So this would be a sort of Avengers-esque New Warriors lineup, which has Squirrel Girl and a couple others in it. But really, Squirrel Girl is the only thing that matters to me. So, yeah, Squirrel Girl coming to your TV sometime soon. Neil, what's coming up that you're excited about?
This is a good question. I guess I'm just going to cheat and say the two new Netflix shows, Luke Cage and Iron Fist, because I'm still super curious as to how those are going to get pulled off. I don't really have any other. The Runaways thing is very interesting to me, but it feels far, far away.
Oh, I said the wrong thing. Damn it. All right, Dave, go.
Oh, what, you're excited more about the Runaways?
No.
Hey, guys. There's a Spider-Man movie in production. I've been trying to figure out as much as I can about it. And I'm, you know, predictably psyched for a new Spider-Man movie.
Can I ask you a quick Spider-Man question?
Yeah.
Spider-Man high school question?
Yeah.
Are you worried at all that there's going to be 15 villains in this movie? Because I feel like we learn about a new one every week.
No, I don't think so. I think
okay, good.
They're going to be villains on the side of this, but I really am trusting in John Watts to make this a high school movie. And I think that the chemistry that we've seen from the kids thus far, doing interviews and whatnot.
Dancing on the YouTubes or the Instagrams.
Has made me think that that's where they're focusing their casting. So if they want to add a couple of villains to, you know, come in and shoot a few warehouse scenes so Tom Holland could beat him up on a green screen later, that's cool. But if they're getting the kids doing kid things, that's what I want.
All right. If you're not worried, then I'm not worried.
I'm not worried yet. I'm very encouraged.
Did you see any footage, any of the Comic-Con footage? Did that leak anywhere?
Not that I've been able to find.
Okay. Really cute. I'm sure you read the description, but like the role that they showed was like Peter Parker's schedule, and it was like chemistry, and you see him like trying to develop his web technology like in the drawer under the table of his lab table at high school, and it's like social studies and him trying to talk to girls and stuff like that. So it's pretty funny. It's pretty charming. And a very high school, all high school focused. Nothing in costume, nothing with villains, just kids being kids. It's pretty great.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be kind of tech based. So we have, you know, the Vulture who's all technology and the Tinkerer who's all technology. And the rumor I've heard is it's Tinker Chitauri technology. And then, what is it? Happy's back. And we know, Happy John Favreau is going to be in it, and we already knew Robert Downey Jr. is going to be in it. So I'm not sure if that thing that was leaked about the Shocker being in it was correct or not, but that would be great, because if we're talking about villains that we can reduce to one scene and still basically get the essence, like Shocker and Tinkerer, those are your guys.
So you're saying it's going to be Tinker, Shocker, Vulture, Spy?
Oh, I'm saying if it's a technology...
Thank you, Neil.
I get it.
If it's a technology-based Spider-Man villain, they maybe don't need a huge backstory about how they, you know...
I'm the Shocker. The I shock Batman things.
Ever. Exactly.
I'm the Tinkerer. I want some money. I tinker things.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. Some of them
I'm Michael
are real
Keaton.
Cerebral.
I played Birdman.
I just do bird stuff.
Yeah. I just do bird stuff now. All right, I'm going to cheat and add my real answer, which is Legion on FX, of course, because I'm a Noah Hawley fangirl. So Legion on FX.
For sure.
For sure. 2017 is coming. It's coming. All right. Dave, where can people find your work on the internet?
You can find me blogging at geek.com, tweeting at DA7E, and podcasting at fightinginthewarroom.com.
And Neil?
You can find me tweeting at Rejects, writing things on filmschoolrejects.com. And you can also follow Storm of Spoilers, which is where you can find the three of us more regularly. Follow us on Twitter at Storm of Spoilers.
I'm Jonah Robinson. You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. And Storm of Spoilers will be back next week with Neil.
A release date for The Winds of Winter.
Yes.
Sounds vicious.
And something else, I'm sure.
We'll have it handled. We'll see you next week. Thanks so much for tuning in. Bye.